welcome to another episode of the Wharton FinTech Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Benedipo. And today, I'm thrilled to have Irana Wasti as our guest. Irana is the Chief Product Officer of Bill, a very well-known and leading provider of software that automates back-office finances for small and mid-sized businesses. And Bill has over 460,000 customers and processes, what I learned during the episode, about 1% of US GDP annually on their platform. In this episode, we'll discuss Irana's illustrious career in product, where she has over 20 years of experience. She was also most recently Chief Product Officer of Typeform, as well as held leadership positions at GoDaddy and Intuit. We're going to talk about Irana's journey in fintech, currently her role and vision at Bill. We'll also discuss the challenges and opportunities of building and scaling a financial operations platform for small businesses, and her insights and advice for aspiring fintech entrepreneurs and product leaders. So without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Irana Wasti, Chief Product Officer of Bill. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on the Wharton FinTech Podcast. Irana, where are you calling in from today?
Hey, Josh. Nice to see you. I'm calling in from San Jose, California.
San Jose. That's a beautiful background you have. For our listeners not watching the video, you'll have to chime in to see the beautiful pictures you have in the background.
Absolutely. I'm calling from our Bill office, headquarters of our Bill office. So those are some of the images that we use at Bill.
There you go. Irana, you have had a very illustrious career in product management. It's really a big honor to be able to host you on the podcast. You've built and managed a lot of really successful products across IBM, Intuit, GoDaddy, Typeform, and now Bill. And like me, honestly, many of our listeners are very interested in or at the beginning of their careers in product management. So with someone who's had such a wonderfully successful career, what's one piece of advice that you would give to these young, aspiring product managers?
Thank you for that introduction. As your listeners think about starting a career in product management, and by the way, I absolutely recommend the career in product management. I've enjoyed it myself. What I would suggest is, as a product manager, your role is to really lead a cross-functional team, because you're defining the end-to-end experience that solves the pain point for your customers. So one thing I would recommend is, in order for you to feel inspired to lead the team, find either the target customer or the pain point that your customers have that you would be excited to solve. So for example, for me, it's about SMBs. I dedicated my entire career to solving the needs of small business owners around the world. That excites me. That drives me. And so finding new pain points to solve for them is something I get excited about, and I can inspire cross-functional teams to work with me to solve those problems.
I would love to retouch on that question about really solving pain points for SMBs, because you do have that trend throughout your career, whether it was at GoDaddy, Typeform, and Bill. But before we get there, I would want to ask, I guess, also more specifically about that product management question. I know this is a bit of your first foray into a little bit more nitty-gritty fintech, or you can correct me if I'm wrong, but for product-oriented people in fintech, what would you say is the difference between being a product manager in the fintech environment versus otherwise, let's say at a GoDaddy or Typeform, stuff like that?
Yeah. What I would say specifically about product management in fintech, in that what I find is that in an industry like fintech, we are trying to solve really complex problems in the background for the target customers who most likely don't have the understanding, nor should they have the understanding of all of the intricacies that go into delivering a fintech solution. Because again, most customers all of us are going to serve are either consumers, prosumers, or small businesses. And so one thing to keep in mind when it comes to fintech specifically is, again, keeping in mind who your customer is and what are you trying to solve for them. Because sometimes, as I notice, and I see this across the teams as well, is that when we try to go, we get really excited about the problem and the technology and the opportunity and the depth of knowledge subject matter experts in the space have about the solution. When you sort of pull back up and think about, well, who is your customer? And do they really care about all of that? Or do they care about the fact that they need to pay someone? They need to get paid. They need this and that. They need international payment and whatnot. So making sure you both get excited about the technology, all of the exciting stuff that happens and the innovation happens in fintech as an industry, but then figuring out how to translate it to the customer that you're trying to serve is something that I think is very interesting and important for the product managers entering this space.
Is there any sort of specific mechanism that you use to remind and keep in that customer centricity within the culture?
Yeah, I mean, it all starts with a very simple idea of talking to the customers. right? Talk to the customers and listen for how the customer talks about what they need, what their pain points are, what are they trying to do? Because again, the subject matter expertise a lot of the fintech PMs bring to the table is this depth of knowledge and then terminology they use that oftentimes isn't even the same language that your customer speaks. So it all starts with listen to your customer, listen how your customer understands what they need to do, watch what your customer is trying to do, and then it's your job to marry it to all of the exciting technology innovation behind the scenes.
I love that. Is there any sort of like mandate of product managers need to talk to a customer once a week, twice a week, or something like that at Build Like Out or at Bill?
Yeah. So we do ask our product leaders to talk to customers on the ongoing basis, but also knowing that everybody has limited time and capacity to get to the customers, there are other ways you can get that information. Go talk to the support folks. They're the ones who talk to the customers every day. They talk to more customers in a day than you can talk to in a month.
Go and talk they hear to the all sales the pain team. Points, right?
Exactly. The support folks hear where the customers stumble, which means we can make experiences more simple. Go talk to the sales team to understand what resonates for the customer when you talk about a certain solution. So those are amazing proxies within the company as well if you can't reach a customer.
Yeah, amazing. So I guess rewinding a bit back to your time. So you just graduated, let's call it, what was it, 10, 15 years ago from Harvard Business School, and you were just starting earlier in career. What are some of the surprises or assumptions that were challenged early in your career, especially right after business school? You came in with this, let's say, some sort of assumption around how everything will be, and then how was the real world maybe different from that?
Yeah. For me, and as a business school graduate, I might have been at least, so this was exactly 15 years ago as I come up for a 15-year reunion. For me, I graduated business school and I had a kid. I had an 18-month-old son. For me, entering the workforce after business school was had to be around how do I drive my career, which I was really excited about, but at the same time, what are some of the guiding principles I have to set for myself and my family that will help me achieve both personal and professional my personal and professional aspirations. And what that translated to is finding the company that respects who you are as a professional and as an individual. And what I learned along the way is that you should absolutely define what your guiding principles are, what your non-negotiables are, and then you should go and look for the company that respects that. And in fact, when you find that perfect combination, you can do so much more. You can amplify your career growth and you can have sort of, you can be excited and proud of what you achieve in your personal life, whatever your personal goals are. And what I learned along the way there is that the expression I'm sure you heard and your listeners heard is that people don't leave companies, they leave managers. Absolutely had to encounter that early on. Early on in my career, joined fantastic companies, but ran into situations where the company might be great, but the manager not so much. If the manager is not willing to respect, again, who you are as a professional and an individual, again, go find a place that respects you because that will absolutely amplify your career ambitions and help you achieve those ambitions. So those were some of the early learnings I got entering the workforce after my MBA.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally hear that. Well, I'm totally hear that because I'm getting married in 10 days. So that's part very much at the front of my mind is how do you balance, you know, the personal life.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. I want to poke on that a little bit more. Is there anything else that you did? Is it really just picking the right manager, picking the right company that will support you in having this like, you know, rich home life? Or is there anything, other strategies or anything else that you used along the way?
So again, for me, it did start with defining like what are my non-negotiables, right? Mm-hmm. Because those get put to a test, right? It's much easier to define them. It's much harder to stick to them. As you go through your career and through experiences, those will get put to a test. So that was a starting point for me is defining them and sticking to them. But aside from finding the right company, the right manager, the other thing I found that helped me grow my career specifically is also find the challenge that needs you. There's a lot of exciting things we can all work on. So many exciting things, especially being based in California, in the heart of all the tech innovation and startups and the land of all the tech opportunities. Find the problems that could use your expertise, your help, your passion, and definitely your time, because you're going to invest a lot of your time into solving those problems. And I found that whenever I picked sort of a meaty problem that was important to solve, then that in itself always lends you into your next opportunity, your next, whether it's again, challenge, promotion, or whatnot.
That's a perfect segue because that brings me to my next question, which is really about how then you started at GoDaddy, right? And that's where this working deeply and intensely with small businesses and solving problems for small businesses really arose. where did that passion, I guess, for solving problems for small businesses come about? Was it something that happened before GoDaddy, or was it you arrived at GoDaddy and all of a sudden saw how many problems there are and how it's hard to run a small business in this country or in general? How did that come about?
So the passion for small businesses actually started before GoDaddy. It started with Intuit. And the way it started Intuit is Intuit happens to be one of those companies that cares deeply about its customer and being customer-centric. And being a product manager in a company like that really teaches you how to think about customer first and understand your customers. And since Intuit, and I was in the payments division at Intuit, solves for small businesses, I had a chance to meet a lot of small businesses, understand their pain points, understand how they operate. When I moved from Intuit to GoDaddy, that opportunity just amplified because GoDaddy solves for millions and millions of small businesses around the world. In fact, by the time I left GoDaddy, we were serving 20 million businesses around the world. And when you have to help small businesses around the world, again, scale, get online, succeed online, it really helps you see the impact your work has, both again in US initially and then later across the world. So that's where the passion came from. Like you can see your impact. You can see what you work on and the difference it makes for the customers, for their community, and then for economy in general.
And then while you were, I guess, also at Intuit or at GoDaddy, were there some frequent problems that came up with payments or managing finances that you were like, oof, I wish we could just go solve this problem, or this problem just keeps on coming up across all our different customers? Was there anything like that?
So for small businesses, and it's very obvious and visible when you engage with small businesses, is managing their cash flow is the lifeblood of their business. Any way, any solution that either helps them bring more business to them, or make them more efficient in the use of their time and monetary resources is a pain point worth solving. Again, whether it's with GoDaddy, where the focus was more on helping bring more business to the small businesses, but now with Bill and actually helping small businesses optimize the use of their cash flow, you can see that the underpinning of any business, but especially the small business, is that cash flow. And small businesses don't have safety net. They don't have multiple attempts that they can try at something and then help themselves not fail but succeed. Like they need the help. They need the help of technology. They need the help of our solutions and the services we provide. So that does underpin everything that helps small business succeed.
Yeah, totally. Just to cap off on your career, so before you moved over to Bill, you were also at Typeform, where you served your first time as chief product officer, as chief growth officer, I think, as well. What were some things that you learned from taking on your first like chief X officer position, especially at such a fast and quickly moving company?
My experience with Typeform taught me a couple of things. One is it was the smallest company I worked for, and it was a fast growing company. And when you work for a smaller, fast growing company, regardless which CXO you are, you get to do and influence and impact a lot of things across functions. And so being able to take on any challenge that comes your way, regardless of the functional expertise, was something really, really exciting and rewarding. The other thing for me was joining Typeform, which was really interesting to have, is prior to Typeform, I was working in an international setting because I was leading EMEA, but I was still working for a US headquartered company. With Typeform, I got a chance to work for internationally headquartered company and just to see how a company that grows up sort of, in this case, it was in Spain, how they approach business, how they approach customers, how they approach the opportunities, was just a really interesting new perspective to gain.
Yeah. Do you have any good stories from, I guess, maybe a new task that you had to take on based on this crazy environment? Oh, they asked me to go do something like this. And do you have any sort of stories like that from your time there?
Yeah. For example, we were getting ready for the next funding round and I had to put together and pitch our funding deck for every single investor.
No way.
And we got our round and it paved the way for the company to have cash for another couple of years. Mm-hmm. I've never had to do that before. And it was super exciting, super interesting. You learn a lot from the questions you get asked, very fast paced. Yeah, it was definitely a new experience.
It's not a small business, but your own taste, like kind of running a business in that sense.
Yeah, definitely in the medium size. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I was hoping to hear just a bit about your decision to join Bill. I would love to hear a lot about how Bill works, but just personally, how did that decision come about?
As I mentioned, I've dedicated most of my career in serving small businesses. And what's interesting is that the number of companies that successfully serve small businesses at scale, they're not that many of them that do it well, that do it at scale, and that solve truly sort of the key pain points for small businesses. Bill is one of those great companies. Bill was founded with an idea of helping small businesses automate their financial needs. Bill created its category. Bill was the leader in that category, in that space. And meeting with the Bill founder and CEO, Renee, and learning more about the business and the needs of the small businesses that Bill has already been serving, but there was so much more to do, was one of the things that was really exciting for me to be part of.
Why do you think that there are so few businesses, especially in fintech, that serve small businesses at scale?
I definitely have some hypotheses. And one of them is that serving small businesses is not easy. There's this paradox in serving small businesses where they need extensive, robust solutions, but they need them in a way that's simple, easy to use, easy to get started, shows that SMB their immediate return on investment, because again, back to cash flow is something that's critical for the small business. And they also need some kind of a safety net in the providers they choose. For example, whether it's at Bill or actually at GoDaddy before, providing certain support services is really important for small businesses, because who else would they turn to? They don't have the subject matter expertise in-house oftentimes. They don't have departments who look after a specific function. They oftentimes have to cover it all. And serving small businesses is tricky. And then the other thing that's tricky is that, again, small businesses, you count them in millions. There's 32 million just in the US alone. Whatever you develop as a solution, it needs to work for a large number of customers. Right. This isn't a one-to-one relationship. This has to really scale quickly in order for you as a business, as a service provider, to get the coverage you need to continue to succeed as a business.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. So you show up as chief product officer. I'm sure you had a lot of ideas and plans, but Bill is already very established, right? It's already a very extremely successful company. Did you arrive with any sort of framework or 100-day plan or something like that when you showed up? And maybe if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do have some personal frameworks that I use when I join a new role or a new company. And it always, always starts with listening. Initially, my focus is meet as many people as I can across the entire company, so every function, and across various levels of the company. And really, I'm meeting those people to better understand what excites them about the business we're in, what challenges they see in the business we're in and opportunities, and what do they expect from me? Like, what do they expect from somebody in my role? Where can I help? And doing so, again, doing that across all the different functions and levels gives you a really good overview of the company that you join and the opportunities there are, but also what do people need from you? Like, where can you get started? That's always part one. Part two is evaluating where we are from a strategy perspective, because you need to have a strategy, in my case, product strategy in place in order to align organization, prioritize what you work on, define the outcomes and the metrics you can drive, and so on. So that was part two, is figuring out where we are in product strategy. Does it need an update? Do we need a new strategy? Do we need to define a strategy? And then once you have that in place, then you start going through, does my organization align to the strategy? Do I have the right talent? Do we have the right prioritization, resourcing level, and so on?
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of work in a short time period. Were there any expectations that surprised you when you went to go? Maybe not surprised, but what seemed to be like the general expectation of what is expected of you as the chief product officer? What seemed to be the wisdom of the crowd, let's say?
Do you mean specifically in Bill or in general?
In Bill, let's say, in Bill.
Yeah. So when I met with the folks at Bill, a couple things were clear. One thing was clear is that everyone at Bill was really excited about the customer that we serve and the opportunity we had ahead of us. And that the company has done a great job getting to the stage that they were in. The company has grown, went public, and so on. But it was also very clear that we needed to continue to advance what we offer, problems that we solve for the customers that we serve. And this is where I came in that I was able to articulate what is the product strategy going forward and how do we go after that? Because again, defining product strategy is important because the whole company needs to get excited about the product strategy, right? Like that is what you sell to your customers is the product. How do we make sure that the whole company is excited about it and everybody's marching in the direction of the product strategy?
Yeah, I love that. All right. So now for Bill. For the sake of our listeners who might not know, Bill is very famous, but there might be some customers who don't know what Bill actually does. Why don't you give us, in your own words, what does Bill do?
Yeah. So Bill is a leading financial operations platform. We offer an integrated financial management platform that helps our customers, SMBs, manage their accounts payable, accounts receivable, spend and expense, cash flow, and cash flow needs.
Okay. And what are some of Bill's, I guess, current product strategies, which you can divulge?
Yeah. So one of the way I think about the product and the product strategy is, again, from the lens of the customer. What are the, what we call in the PM speak, what are the jobs to be done that our customers are trying to do? And therefore, what I told you about our integrated financial platform right now is that here's all the product functionality we have, accounts payable, receivable, spend and expense. From a customer lens, the way we think about it is that a customer has, when they run a business, they have to manage their cash that leaves their business, cash out. They have to manage the cash that comes into their business, cash in. And most importantly, they're trying to optimize their cash flow. How do you make the most of the cash coming in and the cash leaving your business? So that's how we think about product strategies. Again, what is the job we're trying to solve for the customer and what products we offer in order to sell those jobs better?
And the story of Bill, I think it started a lot more niche. Started a bit more about just like managing your vendors or managing payouts, right? Accounts payable. So if you could take us, I guess, through like that original problem, I know you weren't working there at that moment, but how Bill tackled the problem originally and how that's shifted and grown over the years.
When I think about Bill and when I hear our founder and CEO speak, I think the ambition and the vision has always been there, is to solve financial, to help our small businesses with their financial operations, financial automation. That vision was always there. But when you have a big vision, you need to get started somewhere. And one of the first places the company got started is was solving accounts payable or automating accounts payable workflows, adding in accounts receivable automation. Then we've added in spend and expense management and so on and so forth. So I think when I think about Bill's ambition, vision, it's always been in the direction of helping small businesses manage their financial operations. Again, it's a journey. You're not going to deliver that overnight and you want to sort of prioritize, again, the way you get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to clarify, what exactly is accounts payable automation and accounts receivable automation?
Yeah. So again, think about it as a business, as a small business that you run. As a business, you provide, let's say, services that you need to get paid for. That's what we call accounts receivable. You need to get paid for the services you delivered. And then you have your own providers. You have vendors to pay, suppliers to pay. That's what we call accounts payable. And that's the money leaving your business. And so when we talk about workflows, again, think about when you, as a business, when you need to pay your vendors and you have an employee working for you, you need to make sure that that employee knows how to process and pay that account. But you need to be the one that's, say, approving how much money goes out, when that money goes out, how your vendors get paid, and again, vice versa. How do you want to receive payments and so on? That's the flow of money that we help manage, automate, optimize for the small business.
And then in terms of tracking cash flow, are you actually integrating with bank data, bank feed data? How exactly do you give this, let's call it financial operational picture to the business?
Yeah, we do it through two things. One is through the experiences that we own. We get, therefore, the visibility into mm-hmm. the bills that come into the business. Again, that money that comes into the business and leaves the business. And then we also do it by integrating and syncing data through the various providers so we can have a more holistic view for our customer about their business. And this is also the intent of the customer, of course.
Right. Yeah, of course. Maybe take me through what is the end vision. So I understand that it's like one place to manage all your financial operations for a small business, but maybe a little bit more in depth about what does that look like? Maybe what is the end vision? Maybe you're not there yet, but maybe just a bit of what a small business owner could be like, wow, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So what we believe is that, again, if we can help our customers optimize their cash flow, then we can help them succeed. We can extend the life of a small business by doing so. A lot goes into what it takes to optimize cash flow. Both comes in the shape of different workflow experiences, right? The more of your business you bring online with us, the more we can see and provide insights, help you forecast, plan, and so on. But also, the more things we offer to you, such as, for example, do you want to get paid sooner? We will fund that for you while you wait for whoever you provided the services to pay you, as an example. Like, we look for ways to really, when we say optimize cash flow, give you the tools or options to really optimize that cash flow. Again, there's a lot that goes in there, but as I talked about small businesses, there's 32 million small businesses just in US alone. Today, we transact 1% of US GDP through BILL platform. Wow. There's so much more opportunity ahead of us to help even more small businesses, because again, this is what will help them survive. This will extend the life of that small business if we can help them ensure they have the funds to run the business.
Wow. 1% is still a lot. I have to say 1% of US GDP is still a lot of money.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
I love the idea of like the advancing accounts payable or accounts receivable, I guess.
Both.
Yeah, I guess both. Is there any other examples like that where maybe BILL steps in to facilitate, maybe, and also provides an extra product that facilitates something for small businesses that maybe they wouldn't otherwise know about?
Absolutely. Another product we have is called BILL Spend and Expense Management. Think about a corporate credit card that is easy for you to manage for your business, for your employees. It's an experience that we provide that helps you set budgets of how much you want to spend, how much you want to allow different employees to spend. It gives you the controls over those budgets, and it gives your employees a very easy way to then pay for something via those credit cards, but also easily get reimbursed. I don't know how much you've dealt with reimbursing, for example, for looking for receipts and matching the receipts to the expense and figuring out how to get paid on that. All of that gets automated, gets simplified, again, to enable that small business to easier run their financial operations, but also to have an easier reconciliation of, again, here's the funds leaving my business via the employee spend, and how do I manage that? So spend and expense is another exciting product example that we have.
Fun fact, we're actually users of BILL at Wharton. I use BILL all the time to get reimbursed. So
amazing. I know that. And we'd love to hear your feedback.
We'll do a user interview after. That's great. Yeah, that's so interesting. That's so cool. So I guess, how do you handle, I guess, the complexity behind the scenes? Because it sounds like there's a lot of integrations. There's a lot of algorithms called machine learning, probably, to figure out who to give these, extend these loans to, and all these different kinds of things. How does BILL manage that complexity? How do you manage that complexity from like a product perspective, from a technology perspective, and also at scale? 1% of US GDP is processed. How do you make sure that's all being handled correctly and processed at scale?
Yeah. I mean, leveraging and deploying the right technology to solve these problems is really important. For example, we wouldn't be able to move 1% of GDP if we weren't leveraging AI functionality, as an example. So as a customer, as you come in as a customer and you decide to upload a bill into or bring a bill onto the BILL platform, we deploy AI functionality to help easier recognize what that bill is, what that invoice is, match you to the vendor and our network, as an example, and help you get paid faster. Again, leveraging the latest and greatest technology that we can leverage to enable the experiences to our customers that should look flawless, that should look sort of, it's magic, automation, automagic, sort of from a lens of the customer, but it is powered by a lot of fantastic technology underneath.
Yeah. Would you consider BILL product-led, like a product-led company, let's call it?
Absolutely. What we offer is product. That is what we take to market. This is what our customers know us for and use us for. And we continue to, again, without the product, without the product experiences, we wouldn't be able to offer the solutions to our customers.
So in order to enable that product-ledness, let's say, how have you thought about how to structure your organization? Like, how is it structured, I guess, at BILL, like the whole product organization? And I guess, how have you thought about it and maybe improvements or stuff along the way?
Yeah. As I mentioned to you, sort of the first order of business for me when joining BILL was to articulate a clear product strategy. Because without product strategy, you wouldn't know how to shape up the organization. Once you have a product strategy in place, you need to have an organization that supports it. So one of the things we did in defining organization is we made sure that we have the right product pillars that are in existence in support of our strategy. But the other way to think about product organization setup is also, how do you isolate sort of products and experiences from shared component and shared services? That way you have teams that focus on enabling shared services so that everybody doesn't have to do the redundant work, but it enables the sort of what we're calling product or feature teams to go faster.
Are there any other metrics of success beyond that? I guess like North Star metrics that you're tracking, the one thing that you're coming in every day and you're like, oh, I hope we see movement here or something like that.
Yeah. So depending on the product, the metrics vary because, again, some products are the ones that drive usage. Some products derive, again, monetization, like all of the payment products as an example. And then overall, how we also want to think about our product is, are we delivering the experiences our customers expect from us? So a metric like NPS comes in handy and is often used for that. So again, it really depends on the product and what you're trying to drive for with a specific priority. But the most consistent themes are around activation, usage, and experience, which is NPS.
Nice. Awesome. Cool. So just a little bit more now to the like future strategy, future outlook for Bill, for yourself and Bill. What's your vision for the future? What's like the next 5 years look like for Bill?
We want to make sure that all the small businesses that need help and need the tools to optimize their cash flow, to manage their financial operations of the business. I mean, every business has financial operations. We want to scale what the products and services that we build to as many customers as we can. There's, again, like I said, a huge opportunity out there with 32 million SMBs just in the US alone. And the customers that we do help and the customers that we work with and the customers that we talk to that use our product, we see the difference that we make. We believe more and more customers could discover that, should be using the product, and we will continue to enhance that product to really give them those insights, those recommendations for the decision to be made to help them optimize their finances.
I love that. Are you using any sort of Gen AI or AI to help make those recommendations?
Look, absolutely. As I mentioned, processing 1% of US GDP without leveraging all of the latest technology. But again, we use it from a perspective of how does this help the customer? Like, right. It's not about, is this the latest? The customer doesn't come and ask us for AI. The customer comes and asks us for, give me the insights.
Recommendations.
Give me recommendations. Help me optimize. Help me understand better. We use the technology such as AI to enable that.
Right. I guess like part of what I want to pick at is there a bit of a trade-off between, and when we're serving so many small businesses, I'm sure there's like certain verticals that have very specific needs, and it might be big enough verticals that might be attractive from a business perspective versus the trade-off being either building out something that might be more verticalized, might be obviously not like as specific as building something for restaurants, but something like that, building something for a specific vertical versus saying, hey, there's this big feature that is going to be applicable for everyone, but maybe is less of a dire pain point for one specific vertical. Is there that sort of trade-off going on, and how does Bill tackle those?
That's a great question. And that's a strategy question, right? From a strategic perspective, where do we see the opportunity? Is it to go deep within a vertical, or is it continue to be a horizontal solution? Up until this point, Bill has been the horizontal solution. Because again, we see the needs that we solve for that with the functionality we provide can serve across the different verticals and the various size of SMBs. And that's the strategy we're pursuing at the moment. But there's always an evaluation of, for a specific product, for a specific feature, is there something vertical specific that we can incorporate? But that is the strategy question that we continue to come back to of where do we continue to see the opportunity and how do we want to prioritize it? Because you always want to do it all. You want to be horizontal and vertical. You want to serve all kinds of customers. Like that's the exciting job about a product leader. But you always also then have to figure out how do you prioritize?
Yeah. It's trademark of a great product-led company. Okay. So what are some things maybe about Bill that listeners would find surprising, maybe about internally within the culture or anything else like that?
What I find interesting about Bill, and I think it would be interesting for our listeners to hear about, is that a lot of our conversation was around the tools that we provide, AP, workflow automation, AR, and so on. Those are the products. When you actually talk to the customers and when you actually see the reaction or the impact that Bill has had on their business, it is so sort of fascinating and rewarding. The interesting part about a company like ours is, again, we provide like really extensive fintech solutions, both software and payments and so on. But from the customer lens, like we are the lifeblood of their business. And like that to me is a really interesting spot that Bill is in, and Bill is very uniquely positioned to serve.
Yeah, I love that. How do you think about hiring product managers, let's say specifically at Bill?
For me, a great product manager starts with somebody who is excited and knows how to think end to end. Think of that GM mindset, because anything you build, a product, a feature, a product line, that product leader has to think end to end. because the product doesn't just start and end with what you launched. It also needs to include, how do you take it to market with marketing? How do you engage the sales team? How will support teams support it? Are there implications on other teams across the company? And so that end-to-end sort of GM mindset is something that I believe is really key to be a successful product manager. And then, of course, that goes hand in hand with customer centricity. You have to be excited about the customer, the pain point. Like, it has to be a given. Otherwise, you won't build the right solution, nor will you get your cross-functional teams excited behind what you're trying to achieve.
How do you test for that when hiring? Like, what kind of questions do you ask? What do you look for?
I do tend to ask a lot of the questions about someone's past experience, and I ask for specific examples. Like, give me an example of how you've identified a customer need. Give me an example of how you solved a customer problem. Give me an example when you solved something and it didn't work as designed. Those are all examples just to understand from the past of how somebody approaches a problem.
Got it. What's your favorite interview question?
One of my favorite set of interview questions is actually around values. I've been working for companies for which values are at the core of what they do. This is true for Bill. This was very true for GoDaddy as well. Like, values is something that's really important in how we operate as a company. One of my favorite questions I would ask in the interview is, give me an example when you demonstrated one of the following values that we have. And it always leads to just a really interesting discussion, because people have either something professional, something personal to share, but it always is an interesting way to get to know a candidate.
Like you said at the very beginning of the interview, it's about matching the personal with the professional, having the balance, especially in managers and companies, someone who really respects those that your person have values. Great. Awesome. So this has been amazing. I have a short lightning round where we're going to do quick questions and quick answers, and then that'll be it. So the lightning round, for our crazy lightning round here, what's one piece of advice you'd give someone who's just starting out their career in product management?
Look for a problem that's worth solving. Look for something really meaty, really something that's meaty, complex, very much needed, and you can make it easy, simple, delightful, and it's worth solving. So look for a problem that's worth solving.
Nice. Top book recommendation.
I'll give you two. One is more on the business side, and it's the book I read about a couple of years ago called Humor Seriously. And it's a book written by two Stanford Business School professors. And it's about, how do you bring humor to a workplace? And that's very much near and dear to my heart. That's one of my big values and something I like to bring to work. So Humor Seriously is a really fun book to read to see how to do that. And then on the fictional side, one of the authors I really like, she's a Turkish author. Her name is Elif Shafak. And she writes a lot of great fictional novels. The latest one I read was The Architect's Apprentice. It's about Turkey in the 16th century.
Wow, I love it. Not learning here just about product, but also about some literature. I love it. And then last question, how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
I'm on LinkedIn and I try to post there often, whether it's snippets, videos, thoughts. So please find me on LinkedIn.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Yadana, for joining us on the Wharton FinTech Podcast. It's been a blast. And I hope you have a great rest of your day in California.
Thanks, Josh, for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Wharton FinTech Podcast. If you like the show, please like or comment on social media, or even consider leaving us a review. It really helps spread the word to more listeners. If you want more content from our FinTech community, please subscribe to our podcast, or you can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Medium at Wharton FinTech. There, you'll be able to find interviews, articles, and so much more analyzing all aspects of the FinTech industry. And as always, a big thank you to our editor, Rafael Austria. And until next time, I'm your host, Josh Benedivo.